You are listening to episode 144 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, Warrantless Android Searches.
Welcome to episode 144 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. 144, also coincidentally, my favorite DPI. Today is June the 22nd, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my growth of death-defying brother, James Furlough.
I might actually die. I just had some water go down the wrong pipe.
That is not good.
I think, unlike the U.S., I will die.
Oh, man.
Not good.
You lost to the water. We're seeing if you make it out of the groove of death at this point.
Yeah. No, that was a pretty exciting finish. Well, the finish wasn't exciting, but the result was exciting. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to going on, especially since the Italians managed to completely flummox it.
Yeah, last time we talked, you were all about them. And
Yeah. Not going well for me this round.
The European teams are struggling outside of the orange men. I would even say Germany's struggling. They weren't dominating, but, you know, they went on, so that's good.
They were, but they were in the group of death.
That's
and
true.
Let's not forget that the Germans have a coach on both the German team and the U.S. team, and they have a full set of German players on the German team and at least five on the U.S. team. So the Germans have really, they've really gone out of their way to spread their chances around.
Diversifying.
Exactly.
But all diversifying does is help you not lose.
It's true.
It doesn't actually help you win. So it just means they'll do okay.
Better than Spain. Better than the Italians.
England?
Yeah, right. So I gotta ask, have you seen the robots in disguise at all?
No.
You not? Yeah, neither have I. Are you gonna see the robots in disguise?
Yes. Well, eventually.
All right.
I'm sorry, I'm a little slow. A little slow. Come on, what is he talking? Okay, I figured it out. Yeah, I almost saw it Saturday night, but by the time I realized it, it started like 8 o'clock and it was 8:06.
Yeah, it's a little bit
like,
late. Unless you're literally standing outside of the theater at that point. So it's a little late to it.
I live less than 10 minutes away, and you know, previews go for like a half hour, so in theory, I could have made it, but I feel like if you miss the previews, you might as well not go to the movie.
I honestly couldn't agree with you more on that point. That's especially a movie like that. Like, half of my joy comes from the previews.
Because it's not a good movie, or because you like those type of movies, and therefore you will like those types of trailers?
I like those types of trailers a lot, and I don't have a high expectation for the quality of this Transformers movie. I have not been overly enthusiastic about the last few. I begrudgingly enjoy the first one because it's not as bad as the other two.
It's a little too much potty humor for me, in my opinion. But
you what?
A little too much potty humor.
In the first one?
All of them, but
yeah.
Yes.
I agree. There's a little bit too much of a lot of terrible storytelling things in my opinion. And there's a lot of really bad CGI, and there's a lot of really bad animation, and there's a lot of really bad storytelling. There's a lot of really bad to go around.
But at the end of the day, they are robots who can change. And so, therefore, I will go see it.
Yeah, you see, and I wish I could get behind that, but I'm as I get older, I'm becoming what I never wanted to become, which is a bit of a stick in the mud about this sort of thing.
Imagine,
like, it's just
really.
Man. I know.
Wow. We used to watch which one was it? Which version? Because we didn't watch the original. We watched the when they did
Beast Wars.
Beast Wars. Yes. Those are the good
I loved
days.
Beast Wars.
It's really good old. And then we were there during the transition from like animation to CGI.
Well, that was like that was what Beast Wars was. It was like their first Transformers CGI version, and they went through a couple of like what they would do is they would every time they upgraded their servers and their rendering software equipment and stuff, they would have like it would be the new season, and they'd go through like this backstory of how they became trans metal or something, and all of a sudden everything would look a lot cooler. Because they could render way more. It's funny. I actually have watched
them
all.
That's interesting. I never thought about that, but
yeah. Well, I didn't notice it when I was young. It wasn't until I rewatched them older that I realized that that's what was going on. And stuff.
Wait, where did you rewatch them? Are they on Netflix?
No, I own them.
Oh,
I'm a Transformers fan. That's
says
part
the
of
guy who doesn't want to go to the movie. Wow.
Yeah, I own the toys. I watched all the original series. That is part of my problem. And the reason why I'm so irritated with the movies is I can't get behind it. It's too big of a deviation. What I loved about the movie, about the cartoons and the TV shows, it's just not there when I go to the movies, and I find that disappointing. So
the fact that they're like on, what's the name of that planet?
Cybertron,
and actually fighting there, and it's just Transformers.
Well, it's I don't know. I don't know. I find this. I don't know. I don't even know what to say. It's not even like the storytelling. It's just how the story is delivered and kind of like what's going on and the goofiness and stuff. And it's just, I feel like they just lost themselves in big explosions and stuff, and you know, cute women and it's just like I don't know. It's just disappointing all the way around. And maybe I'm being overly nostalgic and.
Yeah. I would agree the storytelling could be improved upon. It is a little too brute force.
Yeah. I personally believe, and this is actually my biggest problem, I think the animation is terrible. I think they do a terrible job of showing the robots being big and you know, like, these are supposed to be giant, like, cars, vehicles that, like, lumber around and destroy stuff and get destroyed. And I just feel like when you actually watch the animation of it, not just the CGI, but the actual what they're doing with it, they're way too nimble, they're way too quick, and they look light and they don't look like big robots. They look like cartoons of, you know, like humans dressed up as, you know, it looks more like the old gods. To me, it reminds me of watching the old Godzilla movies where there's a person in a costume. Like, it doesn't look like a giant robot. Whereas, like, and I one of the reasons why I liked Pacific Rim so much is the animation style is so dramatically different in that they look like giant lumbering robots going everywhere. They actually look big and heavy and massive. And since the first movie, that's always been a big complaint of mine. It's just they don't look big to me. They look like they're, you know, whatever. But I'm an old, annoying stick in the mud now, and you know, I can't just enjoy a popcorn popper.
Ugh. That's a shame.
Anyways,
that's
so you know
shame.
What, James, we're not here to complain about Star Wars. I mean, wow, that was.
You know what though?
that was
last week's.
Wow.
Though, just for the record, because I actually had this thought and you brought it up, so I'm going to say it anyways. I have been watching the Clone Wars cartoons, which I think we've talked about this before, but whatever the newest one is.
Yeah.
And the robots, or the droids, the battle droids, there we go, I'll get it, actually pretty hilarious.
I believe it.
They're all self-aware, and they're just like, oh, here comes a Jedi, I bet we're going to die. And then they do. Just like, sweet. Or like, you know, the main boss will leave because things are all falling around. They go, oh, that's probably not good that he just ditched us.
Like, that's pretty funny.
He's like, you guys stay here, but the Jedi's coming. Okay. Yeah, it's pretty cute. I like it. Anyways.
Yeah. That's funny. That is pretty funny, especially because, like, they are, you know, they're supposed to be symbolic of the, you know, questionless drone, right? I mean, they're the drone army men. And the fact that they are self-aware is just that's pretty clever. That's pretty clever.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to check that out. I really like the. I think I've said this before. I really, really like the original Adult Swim, yeah. Clone Wars cartoons, and I think I could get behind the updated Clone Wars stuff. But you know what, James? We're not here to talk about Transformers,
really?
Star Wars, or soccer. I know. Sometimes, some weeks, it does not feel like that. But this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and a continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has a short disclosure he's going to throw our way.
I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Nice. If you want to follow us throughout the week, we're all over social media. We do all sorts of cool stuff when we're there, especially this week. I mean, check it out. It's 4th of July this week, which means there'll be Instagrams of probably people eating at barbecues and fireworks and pretty much it. That's what your entire stream is going to be. And if you'd like us to be part of that stream, adding our fireworks and our barbecues, you can follow me on Instagram at NextWiggin4 or the Twitter, which is at Matthew D. Furlow.
Mine is primarily soccer related as of late.
Yes, quite.
Yeah. Which, did you see my tweet this morning, by the way?
I didn't.
Instagram / Facebook.
How did I miss that?
Post. Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe I didn't and I just don't remember.
It was around 9 o'clock this morning, which is when the first game kicked off. It was a picture I took on my watch where
I did
Pebble, Pebble released an app or approved an app or something like that for the World Cup, where it literally will display the score and like buzz your wrist whenever a score happens. And I may or may not have been sitting in church with that app on watching the game.
That's, you know, how I love technology.
Yep. It was pretty good. Oh, so if you are interested in those soccer types of updates, at James Furlow on Twitter, James Furlow everywhere else.
You know, I wonder if that song is copyrighted, James.
Probably.
How I love technology. Probably. Because I feel like that would be appropriate to be incorporated into the show some way. Because it just kind of, you know, it's great. If you want more information about what we talk about on the show, any links we talk about, all the articles, all the podcast stuff, all the YouTube stuff, all that stuff is at furloughbros.com. Go there, check it out. It's awesome. Very easy to navigate. Very easy to get around. If you hear anything we talk about, you want to know more, or you disagree with us or whatever, go there, check it out. If you disagree with us, go disagree with us quietly. But you can, you know, actually, we have comment sections. Feel free to comment. Getting angry, we'll respond or not. But probably. You want to kick us off?
My name is Kipling Dynamite. I live in...
I was hoping I'd find the technology song. Really get us in trouble.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Looks like it's not up there. That could prove a problem.
Oh, shoot. Whoa.
All right.
Okay. I don't know what you did, but I went into full-on loud echo.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and it's slipping back and forth now. This is probably a problem, man. I'll try muting myself regularly. Sorry.
There's nothing we can do about that? Okay.
I see one new chat message. Did you just do that?
Yeah, with me.
What is this?
Don't worry about it. Don't click on it yet.
Okay.
Free gaming. You talk about your story.
Okay. I want to talk about Cruise, which is a new startup that just came out of stealth mode. Okay?
Okay.
And they essentially... Again, their name is Cruise. Care to guess what they do with cars?
Go on cruise ships.
Yeah, exactly. No, this is Cruise Automation. And I love this this quote here. Google doesn't always win, and which I'm guessing is the CEO saying that, because what they have invented, I think invented is the right word. It is a smart cruise control, which actually sounds kind of exactly like what you and I have described in the past, where it's cruise control that you set the speed and it will attempt to keep your speed. If there's a car in front of it, it will slow down appropriately. I think we've, you know, adaptive cruise control. And it will follow the lanes of your road. And so the idea being that, you know, if you lived in Oregon and had to take I-5 all the way down to Central California for a majority of that 11-hour road trip, you wouldn't have to actually steer or worry about what's on the road. You would just cruise along.
Which would be pretty nice.
Yeah, yeah. It is pretty cool. They were saying, like, their big thing that they've done is they said, we want to do one thing really well, like lean startup style, and get it out to market cheap, which this isn't super cheap. It's like $10,000. But what they can do is they can modify your car and add it to it as an aftermarket deal. Right now it only works on the Audi A4 and S4, but we're just getting started and we're going to roll it out to other cars and we're going to bring the price down. And they were saying the reason why they're able to get it to what they are right now is they're not using LiDAR, which is what the Google cars use, because like those are like $70,000 and expensive.
Expensive.
Yeah, he goes, but by focusing on that one thing and doing it well, we're able to use cheaper parts and drive that cost down, get it in the market, get it starting to work. They also technically don't have to worry about regulation because of what it does. And he's like, we're still going to go through and make sure that it's safe and all, but we're voluntarily doing that. We don't actually have to. And so, it's Kyle Vogt, which he may sound familiar because he was one of the founders of Justin TV, Social Cam, and Twitch. And
wow.
I think it's another one of those examples where here's a guy who has clearly already had some success. We're not talking eBay success like some other founders. But success nonetheless. And so now he's willing to get behind projects that are more risky. He's like, I don't care. You know, I'm willing to try to change the world now. And, you know, this is his way of going about it. One of the stats that he rattles off is that there are about 30,000 deaths a year from car accidents. He says 90% of those are caused by humans. And so, you know, which is what we've heard before, is when you put a computer in a car and, you know, each one of our systems has this corpus of knowledge of from like thousands of hours of driving, and it never gets distracted, it never gets tired. And so he says we have technology that can compensate for the shortcomings of people. And so he says we have a responsibility to do something about it. So for him, you know, it's not just about the fact that I want to be able to text and hang out, have a conversation or eat or something. during my car ride in the morning, he's like, this is actually a safety issue, which is very similar to what we've heard from the other car drivers. And he's very quick to say, this is not autonomous driving. That's not what this is. If anything, this is, we would call it smart cruise control. And he goes, this is really just for highway driving. It's not going to take him from point A to point B. But if you're on the highway, which like apparently a lot of people in California are for a significant amount of time, it's like, you don't have to drive. It'll get you there.
Yeah. I like this idea. I like it a lot because it's, there's a progression. We've talked about this before. And as you said, where it doesn't start with autonomous cars. It's not like one day you've got an autonomous car or you've got, you know, a fully human-driven car, and the next day you've got autonomous cars rolling off the lines and there's no more drivers. No, there's a progression, and it starts with assisted driving, things like automatic braking and intelligent cruise control. Like, I know Priuses nowadays, they come out with lane tracking and stuff. And there's more and more of this sort of thing where car manufacturers are building in assisted driving, and eventually it gets smart enough where it gets you from, you know, from parking spot to parking spot. And the things that Google are doing are important, because what they're doing is they're saying, where are we going to be in 10 years? And that's a good way to fast track to 10 years from now. And every time we've seen that in the history of computing, that's always laid the foundations for explosive growth later on. And the two big examples of that are Java and just the internet at large. You know, companies sat down and asked, well, what can we do with computing technology in 10 years? And you know, you build up all of this, you know, all these cool new technologies at great expense, but those don't necessarily become the selling technology. A lot of times it's the iterative stuff that happened in between that manages to, you know, to leverage what was before it and then, you know, shoot off beyond it. So to say all this is to say Google probably won't win if history repeats itself. And I think they kind of don't. I think they would like to be the winner, but they don't necessarily expect it or think it's critical. I think they're excited about the future and just want to be part of it. And whereas guys like this, yeah, I think that they start to make some move. It looks like this thing's pretty expensive. Number one, it only works on Audis. And do you know what the price is? It's
$10,000.
Like, yeah. I mean, on top of your super
yeah.
nice Audi. But, you know, if you got money, you got a super nice Audi, and you want this little thing, you know, it's good. It's good. And it's just more and more and more along the lines of this, you know, early computers are a great example of, you know, sometimes there was a reason to have this built in, to invest in the computer, and it didn't do very much, but what it did very well, and people were willing to make that heavy capital investment for that small amount of productivity boost. And at the same time, you had other people going on, you know, at like the Xerox Research Center trying to build the next generation of computers. And eventually everybody, you know, eventually the guys that are selling stuff today catch up with the researchers, and then
right.
an explosive surge forward. This is all really cool. I mean, I personally don't think this is going to be a big deal. I think you might see one if you live in the Bay Area, you know, ever. Like, there'll be more than that, but they just won't be common. But it's an important step in the right direction. And it's always good to see guys with a lot of money wasting their money on pipe dreams. That's fun.
Well, and kind of like what you were talking about, which, by the way, did I fix the verb stuff, the reverb stuff?
Yeah, it sounds cool. Tremendously better.
I changed up some of my settings. So if we play something on a computer, I'll have to do some quick switcheroo. But
okay.
But yeah, I think, like you were saying, right? Even if it doesn't go anywhere, the research will be invaluable and be useful. And, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, despite all his, like, you know, Google doesn't always win comment, if Google still wins in the sense that they gobble them up and use their research to go, oh, we got a bunch of smart guys here. Sure, we'll give you $1 billion. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure.
How many units you got to sell at 10 grand a pop to reach to equal even, you know, $300 million?
Yeah.
A lot, for those of you doing the quick math.
I'm sure they'd have no problem with being one of Google's targets. Yeah. It's very cool. It's cool. It's cool to see. It's exciting.
Yeah, I like it. I thought it was neat. The reporter who was in the car in the video, she was like, this is kind of creepy, driving around like that. He's like, ah, it's just because you're not used to it. Once you get used to it, you're like, oh yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah, I believe it. So, you're a fan of Woot, right?
Yeah, I am, actually. I had a startup idea that would semi-compete against them.
Nice.
And I wasn't cool enough to actually see it through, so there's that.
It happens. I know the feeling.
I mocked up the site, figured out how to code it up and everything. I had somewhere in cyberspace, I probably could find the server again where it's at right now. And
well, yeah.
It was cool.
It is cool.
So my idea, cool. Here, I'll just say it because I'm not going to do it anymore. was this, I think we called it Mystery Mosaic. Does that remember? Sound familiar?
Yeah, that's right.
I figured out how to, it was this, sorry, what?
It was like 2008. It's like 6 years ago.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it was this idea where, because it was, we were looking at Woot, and we were just like, I feel like you could do something about this. And there was this other startup around the same time that did like this mystery thing where you would send them a buck and then they would mail you something random. And sometimes it was cool, sometimes it was, or it was like 10 bucks or something. And we were just like, you know, you could make that business model work. As long as the average item you send out is less than a dollar, or less than $10, like you keep the margins, you know, you're fine. And if you can start buying stuff, what is it?
In bulk,
whatever, so that the item retail is actually worth more than say $10, but it costs you less than $10, and you get to keep that margin difference. They'd be like, that'd be sweet. And so, so the idea that we had was to do a we call it as a mystery mosaic, and so it would be. Man, I really wish. I've got the code somewhere. I'm just gonna get myself pumped up again. But the idea was to have a mosaic, a bunch of pictures, and I figured out how to create the random tile sizes and get them all to fit in like a puzzle. Random pictures that it was like every minute or so one of the pictures would disappear, revealing the big prize underneath, and so people would, you know, they would pay to try to get that, and I'm trying to remember exactly how the mechanics worked, but so it would slowly go away, and people would say, oh yeah, I want in on a chance to get that, and then, but if that same thing, like the buy-in would be $10, and we would mail you something. Some of the stuff would be garbagey, whatever, not that useful. But then one person would get something awesome. And we were talking about the marketing. Yeah. And this is what Woot did, right? Where they did their $1 bag of whatever. And for one of the guys, they shipped them, like, it was like a big screen television.
Yeah.
And paid a buck and got that. And that was what, like, put them on the map in terms of, you know, marketing. And people were like, oh my gosh, I want that. And so, so it really helped them take off. And we were like, that's what you do. And you make each of the prizes just like amazing.
So, just so we're clear, I don't think we actually covered what Woot was.
Oh, daily deal site. Every day they would sell a single item, and oftentimes they would get the leftovers of something super super cheap. And then they would sell those things at a crazy discount, and they had a limited stock, and. You know, like, it could be, like, lamps one day, it could be Roombas another day, you know, whatever.
And it was kind of the granddaddy of the Internet Daily Deal.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. And I felt like one of their big things that they did really well was they had awesome copy. The writing style was just excellent. It was very entertaining, and it was just fun to go to the site and read their description of items. They did just a fantastic job writing, which is partially what made it super fun.
Yeah. So I say all this to say because basically what happens is Woot sounds really cool, but if you go to Woot nowadays, it's not exactly what it used to be.
Yeah,
It's now owned by Amazon, and Matt Rutledge, the owner of or the original creator of Woot, has decided sort of what you decided, which was Woot's terrible. Now, especially now, he doesn't like it, and so he wants to restart Woot. Basically,
huh.
He had a non-compete thing that he had to do for a while, and he had to stick with that. But now his non-compete's out, and because it was kind of an acqui-hire, and basically he was like, his opinion was that Amazon took what was cool about Woot, the culture of Amazon, and just crushed it and destroyed what made Woot awesome, which was a single item, kind of very hyper focused. They didn't bombard you with emails and stuff, and he's like, and if you look around at the Daily Deal stuff out there today, there's nothing like Woot, and so he sees that there's an opening for something that is similar to what Woot was originally, but maybe a little bit different. And so they came up with this new idea for a website called Meh.
Nice.
And I think you got to play this YouTube video, so if you want to start queuing it up.
Okay, let's see.
The basic idea was that they wanted to.
By the way, I'm sorry, because you're probably going to get the.
That's fine.
Looping thing again.
That's fine. And so basically, what they wanted to do was they wanted to set up this. You know, do their thing. They want. They're all about like good writing, good marketing for these really small, like hyper single day deals, right? So they're using the gravy train of marketing that is nowadays on the internet, the best way to get any marketing, and they decided to do a Kickstarter project. And if you want to queue up that video, this is the announcement for their Kickstarter video.
All right, here we go. You can hear me, right?
Yeah.
Hey, look, we're kickstarting, starting a thing. But what exactly are we kickstarting? Who cares? We're kickstarting. Crowdsourcing the funds. We'll keep kicking till the starting is done. And you know what to do. Just chuck a little cash our way. And then you too will soon be kickstarting. Making it rain. We're kicking off our Kickstarter campaign. I said we're kicking off a Kickstarter campaign. This is how we're kicking off our Kickstarter campaign.
Nice.
That is one of my favorite. I think that has become the Kickstarter anthem. Number one, the greatest part about that Kickstarter video is they never actually mention what the product is that you're kickstarting. Now, if you go to the Kickstarter site, they do have a very, very, very funny video where they do talk about the product and everything. But it's great because they got all these different backer, you know, or all the different pledge levels. They got the pledge $1, you get 0-day access to the site. So you literally get and
0-day like, access.
They're so great at writing. For the Cheapskate, who we love, of course, here's our early access ticket into Meh. Join us one day before the public launch and pay for the privilege of helping us see if this new site even works. they're doing the, as you said, the grab bag thing again. It's a Fukubukuruo. I think is how you pronounce it.
Okay.
It's like a Japanese thing. But I think I might be completely wrong. It's an Asian thing. We'll be it really offensive. But it's similar in concept. And the early bird special for $5 got you that. They did a $10 one and an $11 one. The late bird, we saved some stupid bags for you, complete with a little price gouging. You still don't want one. And oh my gosh, this is an amazing Kickstarter.
Dude, they already sold all of them.
Oh yeah, they're completely sold out. You can't get anything but the dollar 0-day access at this point.
Nice.
I love this. Risks and challenges. How long do you want to live anyways? the greatest risk is we do fabulously well and use our money to finance a private space station that gets infested with an alien that spreads to Earth during one of the wilder R&R weekends in Cyber Saigon, turning half of humanity into displaced blood slaves from beyond the planets. And, you know, they went through all their risks. The fourth greatest risk is meh.com is just one more hollow consumerist stunt and does nothing to improve e-commerce, the internet, or your orgasms. There are no other risks. And it's just, oh my gosh. And the video, they get into the whole idea of it's going to be, oh yeah. And they've got like their main spokesman is this troll that was singing the song earlier. It's a puppet, sock puppet troll. And he's hilarious, and they basically get into the idea of it's going to be a brutal review of these products. They'll have a product, a single product. It's going to be a daily deal. They're not going to bombard you with emails and stuff. And they'll just have a really quick, witty review that's kind of honest, like pros and cons on this thing. And if you want it, you want it. If you don't, you don't. And hopefully it's a good enough deal where people will get in on it. So I knew you liked Woot, so I wanted to bring you to your attention this project. But I think the other bigger trend that I see going on here is they won't tell you this on their Kickstarter page. They only tell it if you read the TechCrunch article where they talk about it. So their pledge goal was $10,000. They've raised $15,000, which is pretty good for, you know, a site like this. But Woot's the co-founder, or the founder of Woot, Matt Rutledge, is rich. He got paid a ton when Amazon bought Woot. And just to sort of really prove my point that the Kickstarter page is nothing but an advertising gimmick, and they've realized what Kickstarter is, to buy meh.com, a three-letter domain name, which is rather rare, it cost the team $100,000. That. You know, not to mention the team of engineers and, you know, original buying of stuff for this. So that 10 grand is really and truly just an effective advertising. And it makes me want to start a stupid project like that all the more, as people are willing to spend ridiculous money on Twitter if you can enter on Kickstarter, if you can entertain them a little bit. There was one $100 deal that I actually might have done had it not been the fact that it was already sold out, because it was only allowed to 10 backers. But it was basically you could make an advertisement for a day. And I was going to make Furlough Bros could totally throw up an advertiser worth $100. And I think a ton of people are going to check this out. So, but I realized it too late. Bummer. But yeah, meh.com. And check it out. When it goes live.
Money refunded if we hit your ad. That's pretty funny.
No. Clever writers.
Yeah, no, that's and to be honest, that's the secret of it all.
Yeah.
Is the writing. If you can write well, I mean, even Groupon writes well. It's not as funny, I guess. You know, because these guys are over the top funny. But Groupon's writing is pretty good, and for stuff like that, that's really really important. Because that's why you want to read the entire thing. You're like, oh, this is funny. They're going to make me laugh, and you see, you make sales when that happens.
Yeah, I never read the risks part of Kickstarter campaigns, which should tell you something about the nature of Kickstarter. But I made it down to the risk section on their page because it was worth it. I knew there was going to be a payoff.
Yeah. You got four risks.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. That's cool that they're doing that. Interesting.
Oh. So there were two big topics this week that I think...
Do you think so?
I really do think so. Well, it depends. As far as what we normally talk about, there was only one big topic, but I feel like the other one was kind of a big deal too.
GoPro going public, that was a big deal?
Yes, I think that's a big deal. That's not the biggest deal.
Okay.
But we'll give it the Apple treatment because it probably deserves it. So
probably.
We'll leave the SCOTUS for a little bit later. And we'll start off with the Google I/O.
Wait, I thought it was an Apple keynote.
No, we're giving it the Apple treatment, which is to say, we're not going to give it short shrift, we're going to give it full shrift.
Are you sure? Because I really felt like I was watching an Apple keynote.
Yeah, well, I see what you're saying. I think I get what you're driving at.
Let's
it
see.
Was a little bit
new
Apple
operating
app.
System, check. Fitness app, check. Wearable devices, though rumored, check. TV, check. I feel like they...
Don't forget Android in the car, check.
Oh, yeah, the car. That was the other one. Just like, come on, new design, style, and philosophy, check. I don't know. Integration between Chrome and the device and the other stuff, check. I don't know. It's both companies, honestly. Google said it's second because their event was second, but clearly they've been working on it before then. It's just kind of, I don't know. We'll get into the details, but that was my initial kind of like.
I, I think we'll start here because I think it's worth, you know, it's yeah. Germane to this topic.
Oh, look at that. You have an article for it. Perfect.
Yeah. Google shames Apple's iOS for adding what Android did years ago. So obviously Google or Apple was making fun of Google a couple weeks ago as we talked and discussed about it. And as you said, Google would undoubtedly fire back at directly at Apple when they did their keynote, which they did. And they made this slide of Android 1.0, 1.5, 2.0, 2.3, and all the different variations over the years and mm-hmm. the different features that they added. And they specifically called out a couple of Apple's features like extensions and keyboards and widgets as things that were added in Android 1.5 back in 2008. And Apple finally got around to it in 2014. Which was, you know, that's a little rough, man. That was a shot across the bow.
Nice. That's a good shot. I like that.
Yeah, it was. You know, and it's funny.
Good
I mean,
point.
You know, it's somewhat fair, you know, like to be totally honest, like I don't care that much about keyboards. Obviously, you know, if you've listened to the show at all, you know, I'm quite opinionated about my keyboards.
Yep.
And so, but at the same time, you know, how hard was it to add that access and to do exactly what they did, which was to say, you know, give it different permissions? And how hard was it to get around to allowing, you know, more advanced widgets and stuff? I don't know. I mean, I you know, Google has got a point, but at the same time, as you're pointing out, you know, it definitely felt like there was a bit of copy and pasting going on both directions this year. And
well, you just Google get a didn't. Sense that we're diving too broad too fast, but that's okay. We'll do it anyways. You get a sense that the market is maturing, and therefore, what you're doing is you're watching the operating systems reach parity, and because they're both filling in gaps where they need to. Yes, I agree. Android back in 2009 had custom keyboards, text predictions, and a form of widgets. I mean, iOS doesn't even have widgets yet, and it probably will one day. There's stuff that Android L, you know, is adding where you're like, dude, Apple's had that for a while. You know, consistent right. design theme. Let's go with that. As a yeah. big one, we're like, this is amazing. Like, yeah, it is. Great idea. But again, it's both. What they're doing is it's maturing. And so, you know, when they were first starting out, they had to decide, what are we going to focus on this year? And now they're going, okay, what's left?
You right, know?
And,
exactly.
And you tend to look over at the other camp and go, well, what have they done that we wouldn't mind? Oh, yeah, that was a good idea. We should do that too to make ours more complete. You know, they're both doing it. And you just know it, yeah, which is why they're both very quickly like, all right, let's talk about TV. Let's talk about wearables. Let's talk about this other stuff because they know where the roadmap is headed 3, 4, 5 years from now.
I think what's really telling about to bolster your point is that both Apple and Google launched new programming languages this year.
Yeah.
You know, they're moving off of the Delvec virtual machine. They're moving on to the Art machine over in the Android camp, which has Dart as its language. Obviously, Apple's moved over to Swift, and Dart is not as big of a departure from Android Touch or whatever it was that they were calling it. That is not as big of a departure as Swift is from Cocoa Touch, but it's still a pretty big departure. I mean, they're big changes, and they're building an entire new virtual engine to run the whole thing, which is a big departure for a lot of your hardware guys and your designers and stuff. You know, it's not just like like you said, they're getting to the point where they're not just adding features as quickly as possible. Most of the features are there, and now they're looking back over their shoulder and going, you know, maybe we should work on the fundamentals of how this whole thing operates. And they're rebuilding the foundations of these operating systems, which is cool. I mean, it's exciting, and from a tech dork perspective, from an engineering perspective, it's exciting, and from a developer's perspective, it's, you know, it's challenging and interesting, and hopefully, you know, lead the path forward. But as a consumer, like, who cares?
Well, yeah, what you'll find is your device runs faster in a lot of cases because they're saying, you know what? We do this on the phone, so now we can specialize and focus on that.
Right.
And at the same time, they're looking towards, again, like the wearables, which are going to be even more, you know, like Android Wear is even a more dumbed down, maybe that's not the right word for it, you know, slim, focused version of it.
Right.
And they're trying to unify it to make their lives easier, and I get that.
I think what's really interesting about this, so we'll go over the big boys that were announced this week, so you already sort of listed it, but we'll enumerate it specifically.
Yeah.
So they launched Android One, which is a which I think is a big deal. It's a qualification program for hardware that will allow manufacturers to say different components are pre-qualified for their software. And what that means is that smaller engineering firms can just pick all the pieces off the shelf at the best price and slap it together into a phone, and they're hoping to make these ultra cheap phones. And that's the Android One program.
That'll be good for developing countries.
I think so.
They're gonna sell a zillion phones.
I know, it's crazy. They're launching the Android Wear SDK, which obviously, as we talked about, the watches are the big places that's taken off first. They launched Android TV, which is a software suite that will be going into one of two places, either set-top boxes brought to you by companies like Razer, or it'll be going into being built into the TVs themselves, which is what their goal. And, you know, that goes back to what I was saying, you know, months and months ago, is I think every monitor, every TV screen in the world should have, a system on a chip on it and some version of Android or something. So
yeah.
You plug anything into your TV, but even without it, it's still a TV. So I love that. I think that's really cool. And I hope it works, and I hope it just becomes a standard part of every TV. They launched Android Auto, which is a direct competitor to the software of AirPlay for the car.
CarPlay or something like that.
Yeah, whatever. And it's what's interesting about it is we talked about before is both of their operating systems are designed to run on top of other operating systems. So they're interfaces on top of interfaces, which means that Audi or BMW or Lexus or whatever can put AirPlay or put CarPlay and Android Auto and their own proprietary Maps thing all together on it. And depending on what device gets plugged in, it will run the correct software, which is
isn't really necessarily competing per se. Because your whatever platform you're on is the one you'll use.
And so right.
It's just completing the ecosystem. Another right. way that they're both just filling things out.
Right, and one, I think what it does is it shows that they're not competing on that product. What they're going to be competing on is a complete ecosystem.
Yep.
They're trying to move you into an ecosystem, whereas Apple has traditionally tried to compete product for product, you know, and that's a big departure for both of them. Apple obviously has the Apple TV, but it'll play nice with anything that has Android TV built into it. Why not have both if you can?
This is just the flame wars are really going to intensify now.
Yeah.
Because you're going to now argue about ecosystems. But I was
right.
talking with a friend, and he's like, man, a lot of the stuff Google's doing, he goes, that's pretty cool. I'm thinking about jumping ship. And I was like, I guess, but you already own a MacBook Air, and you have an Apple TV, and you have an iPhone. Why? You're just going to rebuy everything? Is that what your plan is? And
right.
knowing him, the answer is probably yes, and he's actually looking forward to that. But
right. I'm going to say that's why he wants to jump ship, is because it gives him an excuse to go out and spend $1,000 on new computing stuff. Which, I'll be honest, James, there are days where I have to remind myself that that's the only reason I want to do it, and I shouldn't do it. I already have everything. I don't need to rebuy everything. I get that, and I just want to own both of it because it's fun to spend money. From an actual core Android perspective, obviously I already mentioned they're launching Dart, their new language. They're launching their new virtual machine that everything kind of runs on. But they're also launching their new developers. What's it called? operating system, which is Android L. So they're not actually launching a new operating system yet, like KitKat or Cupcake or whatever else they've come up with.
They're doing exactly what Apple does. Developer preview. Prepare yourself.
Right, exactly. The only difference is that it seems pretty clear that there's a good chance that this is going to be Android Lollipop, and they're you know, even going with the code name as opposed to, you know, but they might be completely changing their naming scheme. I don't know, but I don't know if that's significant at all. But what I do think is really significant about it is, like you said, the other big thing that they announced is this new design language.
Yeah.
And as you described, it's an idea that, you know, material, everything has a material. All materials have a texture and a physics, and depending on what you want something to do, it'll have a type of material. You know, so like tabs will have a different type of material than Windows, and or I don't know. I haven't read through it yet. This is what I'm.
So it's the idea of, like, they will all have consistent drop shadows, and they will all have so consistency is a big theme of it. The texture of whatever it is will be the same, and it's the same for like their website, for Google Chrome, for Android. They're gonna take it all across everything. Another big thing, they were talking about this breakthrough moment. They said it was this idea of, it's weird to think about because they're like making fun of Apple's thing, or not making fun of it, but criticizing it. While at the same time, they're like, so we started with this idea of a layer that can move on top. And I'm like, how is that? They're like, this is totally different than what Apple's doing. I'm like, I feel like this is an Onion article right now. Really? You know, there's like, because they talk about translucency, and well, we have layers where they go over each other. It's totally different. Like this, it's the same.
You know who it really sounds like, James? We thought what they did was stupid, and we still think what they do is stupid because they do it wrong. We figured out how to do it right. It's the exact same thing, Steve Jobs. It's the exact same thing. What do you mean you figured out how to do it right? E-readers are stupid. Nobody reads anymore, except our e-reader. Which is us doing it right. It's the exact same problem. I mean, it's a Jobsian 101 class of, do what the other guys do, but still say the other guys are stupid.
Well, and for this designer, it's totally a spiritual experience, like using it. But, and I mean, they're like this idea of like, if we assume that they have physical properties, there's certain rules that we can't do. Like, for example, I actually thought this was a weird example, but whatever. He was like, when you have a card like on Google Now, he's like, they don't just flip over. And it's like, because your phone doesn't do that because it's on a screen. Like, all right.
What?
I feel like we're making up the rules so we could make it do that. But,
why wouldn't you?
I don't know. Something about design is about constraints. If you don't have constraints, it's just art, which was what they were saying about iOS. It's like, there's no constraints. They can flip and twist and turn and do whatever. And ours can't do that. And then there was this other idea of, they're like, you need to know where things come from. So, like, if something, like, if you flick something off, it slides off the screen. It doesn't just disappear. If you bring something on, it'll slide on the screen. If you're making something bigger, and you'll see this in the preview video, if you watch it, like, when you touch the play button, it'll actually grow into the control and, you know, morph, I guess, is probably a better word for it, into the control. It won't just become the control. So there's these consistent animations. Though it was pretty funny on this guy. He had a preview device that he found or something, and he was flicking through it. He goes, "Now, one of the things you'll notice is that the battery's low, so it's in power saving mode. So they got rid of all the animations to save you battery life. So we're not actually seeing a lot of the stuff that they're doing. So it's like, and there's a part of me that's like, I wonder how many power users will just turn that right off.
Well, and I mean that's exactly what you get with the iPhone 5, and it's, you know, and when iOS 7 came out, people got nauseated from all of their, you know, motion stuff was what they were, you know, that, which I
whatever.
Still think was I still think that was a paid campaign from Samsung that they got bloggers to complain about it and to drum up media hits. I think that was at best it was majorly overblown.
I think the animations are awesome. I'm both.
I like it. Well, I think it's important. Yeah, I was going to say, I completely agree with them. Like, that is incredibly important. Knowing that, you know, when things disappear, you know, they're supposed to not just evaporate. They're supposed to go someplace. And the idea that, you know, that there's an organization to it and that there's depth and that there's, you know, yeah, that's really important as a design language. And
also important is there is no skeuomorphism. Even though they're reflecting this material design, it doesn't mean a one-for-one replica of physical materials.
No, whatever.
So I'm just saying.
So, you know what's so funny about skeuomorphism? And I think we talked about this back in when iOS 7 was coming out. And what that means, it's just like there is good skeuomorphism and there's bad skeuomorphism. All of this, all of the whole idea that there are physical properties to these very abstract computational ideas is skeuomorphism by definition. What is good skeuomorphism is, you know, there's drag. You flick something and it slows down automatically. That's good, you know, skeuomorphism, that there's friction effectively. Bad skeuomorphism is when you hit the play button and reels start to turn and they're just taking up space on your leg. And you know, so it's like, I realize we're splitting hairs, we're being a bit semantic here, but it sounds like Android is, or Google is preserving good skeuomorphism for the communicating ideas while getting, you know, foregoing space wasting skeuomorphism, leather binding looks.
Yeah. And what it sounds like, and they didn't necessarily say this, but you know, what it sounds like is it's their way of saying, all right, we now want to have a consistent feel for Android so that people can't make fun of us for things being fragmented anymore. And we tried the whole what was that? It was the manufacturer cohort or something like that. Remember at one time they were like, we're going to get us all on the same page and we're going to get updates to the manufacturers faster as a result. And it's like, that didn't happen. And so you get the feeling that they're like, okay, let's at least try this. So they all look the same and we're going to invest the time and energy and whatever resources into creating a good design that other companies want to copy. And therefore we will all look the same. I still think that might backfire a little bit on them because, you know, Samsung and Amazon still want theirs to look differently. But
I think what's really fascinating about this is that Android Wear SDK, Android Auto, and Android TV, the manufacturers are not allowed to change the UI.
Yeah, they've learned that. They don't need to be all flexible anymore. They are now the 800-pound gorilla, and they don't have to say that. And eventually they'll figure out a way to do that with Android. And I think the one I heard, and it sounds like the Android One may be headed in that direction, is, you know, we're going to give you the current version, and then after it's been out for a year, then we'll open source it and you can do whatever you want. And so it's still open, but the one we're working on and developing is not. And so if you want the latest and greatest, you got to use our designs and our apps, and you can't modify it, or very little modification.
But that's so clearly the direction that they're going, is trying to beat that whole problem of...
I don't blame them. It's a problem.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I like the fact that, you know, obviously, no, I don't think anybody who's on the Android side of the fanboy war will admit that it's a problem. Or they'll always, you know, downsize it. But I think it's clearly a problem. And I think this is them admitting, yeah, it's a problem and we're fixing it. You know, I don't know. It's cool. One of the cool features that they're going to also from a design perspective and kind of what they're doing. So Chrome is getting a big, big bump. You know, obviously Chrome is the...
Is that the way you would put it? Okay.
What do you think?
Thought it was how would I describe it? It was getting the "we're giving up on you" treatment, but okay.
I was gonna say,
turns out HTML5 is not the future. Sorry, Chrome.
Well, yeah, it's funny. That's funny because it's interesting that's how you interpreted it, or you know, because how I kind of took it was this idea that you know, on Android, there's this two different ecosystems, and there is, or there's two different worlds, right? There's the internet world, and that you access through your web browser, and then there's the app world, and
that you access the internet through.
Right, exactly. And you know, it's weird, and it's like, and a lot of times, everybody, you know, when you build a new service, generally you build two things: you build a web page and you build an app, and you can go either direction to either of them. And like Facebook's looked exactly, you know, the Big Blue app looks exactly the same as Facebook.com on your mobile. It's freaky how well that they've replicated both functionalities in two, you know, in like five different languages, scripting languages, and you know, it's nuts. But the, you know, the point that gets to is that you know, obviously Google likes it when you stay in the internet world. It's the world that they live and breathe in, and so they're one of the big things that they're really that they did with Chrome this time is sort of the indexing idea of they're putting web pages on the same UI foot as apps. So like in iOS and Android up to this point, you would go into an app to get to web pages.
Right.
Now they're moving to the point of a web page will sit side by side with an app. And so you can, you know, when you Google stuff, if you Google, you know, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an actor or actress, I wouldn't be embarrassed to list right now. For some reason, Shia LaBeouf was the first one we'll go with Shia LaBeouf. When you Google Shia LaBeouf,
more than meets the eye.
Yeah. You're going to end up with, you know, side by side Google results for your IMDb, app and, web pages, and they're going to UI, how they describe it is the UI presents them as equivalent, you know, things. There's web pages that you're on, and then and it's sort of how you move through everything. Web pages are going to be in this on this similar footing. And the,
yeah,
and the
this guy was showing the carousel of, he's like, here's open apps that you can scroll through, and you'll notice they have different instances. And the example he gave was each tab has its own thing, and he was like, we'll see how that works when you got 50 tabs open, but at least right now it's cool.
Right, and they tell you not to have 50 tabs open, which as somebody who regularly has 50 tabs open, annoys me.
Really?
Yeah, I like having tabs open. Mm. And every once in a while my phone starts to crash, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. I'm not supposed to do that. That is probably the most compelling argument that anybody could make for me to move from iOS to Android is, you can get 4 gigs and 8 gigs and ridiculous gigs of RAM on Android, and I actually would use it because I'm an idiot, and I can't close tabs ever. But I guess what so I think that's a big deal. It's sort of a change in, you know, obviously some people are saying that means that, you know, it I guess, supposedly, according to you, that people are, you know, don't have to make HTML web pages if they have an app because it's on the same level as far as Android is concerned. But I've heard people making the argument that no, this is going to allow them to kind of it actually raises the importance of web pages. Web page tabs are on the same level as apps as you kind of go through your multitasking type interfaces, and because of that, a web page can confidently say, no, all we have is a web page. We don't have an app, but you won't be able to tell the difference when you're on your Android device.
Okay, that makes sense. I was thinking more from the Chrome standpoint, where you can now run Android apps on Chrome.
Right.
And you know, and what you're talking about does genuinely actually sound cool. You know, and it reminds me of, it's not exactly the same, but you know, with Apple, you could create the buttons. Remember back in the day before apps? You could save web pages to your home screen and, you know, and just access it straight like that as if it was an app.
You laugh, but I totally do that.
Me too.
I use that extensively.
Yeah, so it's similar to that, but it sounds like Google's actually done an even better job of integrating it into the operating system.
Yeah, I like it, you know, because it does move, especially because a lot of your mobile HTML5 pages load super fast and everything, and you can barely tell that they're not apps. I mean,
Yeah.
Especially if they're, especially if it's like Reddit, which is a heavy, you know, the Alien Blue app is useless without an internet connection. So there are very few apps that really make sense as a, in my opinion, that make sense as a an internet disconnected app.
Yeah.
You know, a few games here and there. So it's
I
a good
was
move.
Not I joking when move. I said you access the internet through HTML or through an app.
Right.
That's all apps are, man. There's different ways of accessing the internet.
Web portals.
Yeah.
I built my first app this week. I was really excited about it.
Congratulations.
I'd actually built a couple apps, but this is the first one where I built an app and I didn't use a tutorial for step by step by step. I just kind of... which is a big deal. And
what did it do?
It had a button that you pressed and it changed a label. It changed the text in the label and it just cycled through an array of labels and it went through Matthew, Don, James, Lisa... James, Matthew, Lisa, and the whole list. Yeah, so I mean, it's a stupid, simple app, but
you're on your way. You're a developer.
I was gonna say, but it's like the first fully functioning app that I didn't read. Which it's amazing how long it took me to get to that point. But I get it. I get what it was doing for the first time, which is really very exciting. But I made a list of what I want to learn how to do next, and it's like next I want to display a picture. Okay, then after that I want to display a picture that I grabbed from a website. And then I want to grab and post content, get content and post content to a what are those called? A database. And you know, those are the next things. Everything else like classes, inheritance, like important programming things. We're like, I'll learn that later. That'll come along. I don't care. I need to know how to talk to the internet, or I can't build an app that's worth anything. And especially considering the fact that I'm way better at PHP than I am at Swift at this point. So if I can have basically a display interface and all the work is done on the servers because I know how to do it there, that would be preferable. Mm.
You're cheating, pulling some PHP code off your server and displaying the results.
Exactly. That's what most people do. Come on now. That's a go-to.
That's a lot.
Don't do the heavy lifting on your phone. There's two other big... Chromecast got a big update, which is kind of cool. It's growing. It's this independent thing from Apple or from Android TV, which is interesting. Another one of those, creative destruction moments. But they added some cool new features. Like one of the things is you can have it send out an ultrasonic signal sound from your TV, and if you try to connect to the Chromecast, like let's say if you're trying to sync, your friend's trying to sync to your Chromecast because he wants to display pictures because now they do full mirroring and stuff, right? You want to do that sound, but you normally have to give like passwords and stuff. Well, if you're in the room, basically what happens is you hit like, I want to sync to the Chromecast. The Chromecast will have the TV start outputting a ultrasonic signal, and then your mic will pick it up. Hmm. And if your mic picks it up and says, okay, cool, I can, I know which one I'm talking to, and then it'll automatically do the syncing for you, which is very, very, very cool from a, using different signal processing techniques. It's not that cool from you can do that, over Bluetooth with your Apple TV and, iOS. It's not revolutionary. It's an important step. It's cool. I like the fact that, you're getting creative about what you can use to do that. Because they don't have Bluetooth on it, so why not use sound? And then the other huge deal, I thought, kind of going on at Google I/O was the conspicuous void.
Yeah.
The elephant in the room that wasn't, or the elephant not in the rooms, rather.
Yeah.
There were two rather significant products in Google's arsenal that didn't even get a passing glance. Number one, Google Glass. Last year, they had people jumping out of airplanes. Everybody was wearing them on stage or giving them out. I'm like, it's a big deal. They've finally gone full on sale around the world and didn't even bother to mention the fact that, hey, yeah, by the way, we're still doing Google Glass. But even, I think even more telling of the current direction Google's going is Google Plus managed to not even get an honorable mention on their website.
Well, I mean, the article I read about it, you know, I thought it laid it out pretty well. They were like, you know, Google Plus is the guy in charge is gone, and so it's probably going through some sort of transition. What are we going to do with this thing? So not much to say. And then Google Glass has not had the best of PR. Wow, I've been working too much. Plan of record. PR recently. And so, you know, you know, you might say, hey, it's a great opportunity to try to fix that. I think it's another of, let's play it down a little bit and just let it do its thing.
I was going to say, I think it's getting bad PR on a number of fronts. I think the privacy one's the biggest one. They had like two interruptions from protesters trying to get on Google during it too. So, I mean, it was a big, you know, they are, you know, back in the day, they used to get a pass for pretty much anything they did because of the whole, you know, do no evil thing. And everybody was, you know, and they got a huge pass for stuff, and they don't get that pass anymore. And so it's, I think to me, the two things that the biggest connection between the two things that they managed to avoid were that they are huge privacy concerns. Google Glass obviously comes with a whole arsenal of other concerns. It's, mm-hmm. it's too expensive. It does, battery doesn't last long enough. Is it really even necessary? But its biggest complaint is the privacy of, you got a camera on your face that nobody can get away from. And then, you know, in Google Plus, the whole integration with YouTube and stuff like that, and kind of forcing your unified identity online. And I think that they were really steering clear of anything that would get people riled up about, you know, privacy, which is interesting because if you look at where the direction that Apple's going on how they're treating health kits, because Apple, you know, Google launched a whole, you know, Google's launched a bunch of new products. They did a health, they called it
Fit or something, Android Fit.
Yeah, they're doing a health, you know, health chunk of their Android operating system that's like a direct competitor to HealthKit. But HealthKit for iOS, like, their big thing is you control the data. It never leaves your phone. You're completely protected. Da 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 da. You know, it's all about privacy. iMessages. Our servers don't store store your iMessages, and if they did, we couldn't even decrypt them because we don't have access to the keys that are individually stored on your phones. You know, they're really big into the whole, we don't use your data to sell it. Whereas Android, or whereas Google, that's their entire income is using that data. And so they, you know, for better or for worse, you know, right or wrong, I don't think it matters, but I think, or it's not important right now. I think what's really important is the idea that, Google clearly realizes that is bad PR. They steered away clear of anything that, you know, would lead people to say, hey, what are you going to do with that data that you have? You know, focusing rather on extending the Android ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And obviously Android in general was just a huge, everything was Android this, Android that, Android whatever.
This feels like a really good time to bring up, Facebook's little thing over the weekend. Speaking of companies that don't get the whole privacy and concerns,
wow.
Because you do just get the sense that's a lower priority for Google than it is for, say, like Apple. You know, I would say Apple's overly cautious, and Google is not cautious enough. There's a happy medium, but I would say at least both are not as bad as Facebook.
Right. Yeah, Facebook tends to...
Yeah. So it was this weekend. It was uncovered that...
It wasn't uncovered. It was announced.
Yeah. Facebook data scientists conducted an experiment to manipulate emotions of nearly 700,000 users to see if positive or negative emotions are as contagious on social networks as they are in the real world. By tweaking Facebook's powerful news feed algorithm, some users, we should probably just call them lab rats at this point, were shown fewer posts with positive words. Others saw fewer posts with negative words. When positive expressions were reduced, the paper states, people produced fewer positive posts and more negative posts. When negative expressions were reduced, the opposite pattern occurred. These results indicate that emotions expressed by others on Facebook influence our own emotions, constituting experimental evidence for massive-scale contagion. Yeah, that's the word. Thank you. Contagion, okay. Via social networks. And they're like, the result shouldn't be terribly surprising. They're like, what's more surprising and perhaps unsettling is the power that Facebook wields in shifting our emotions and its willingness to use that power to unknowing participants, which they were like, technically, we all agreed to it through our data use policy when we signed up, so it's not illegal. Like, it's just highly, highly unethical. And then they're like, and then there's the tone-deaf gall of the whole thing. This research wasn't uncovered by an investigative reporter. Facebook submitted it to the research PNAS themselves.
Yeah. It's funny. I read a really interesting, because I read back and forth on this, and I never really dove too deep into it, because my gut instinct on this, and I think where I landed is exactly where my gut started on all of it, which is, this is a huge moral ethical question, no doubt. You got to ask, wow, you were trying to make people sad without their consent, and hundreds of thousands of people. Like, this is an important question. Like, you know, should you be doing this with quote unquote unwilling participants? On a moral level, is it ethical? And I think one of my gut instinct is, you know, so what is Facebook supposed to do? Are they supposed to just, they are very aware of the fact that they have a psychological effect on people. What they present to you, what hits the top of your newsfeed, what you'll read is going to affect you. Are they supposed to just guess and never do any research into asking the actual question of, you know, since we are manipulating people by virtue of what we do, how are we manipulating them? Should we do it blindly? Is that more ethical? Or should we do some level of experimentation, try to figure it out, and then craft accordingly what we think is the best way to do it? And you're like, well, okay, now that is just this like weird thing, but that's a great way.
That's a weird way to think about it.
Well, it's important. They acknowledge the fact that they're already doing it. And I sat there and I shrugged my shoulders and I go, man, if you're not asking that question, if you're not trying to figure out how you affect people, you're not doing your job. And because if, you know, you don't, and this is the big problem, what happens if there's an inverse relation? What happens if seeing everybody else happy on Facebook makes you miserable as opposed to Well, but I mean, what if that were the case? They didn't know that before they started doing the research. I mean, I think a lot of people say, well, yeah, that's obvious. But I know people who hate seeing happy pictures on Facebook of people that they like, because it's, you're quote unquote seeing people's quote highlight reel, right? And whereas, you know, right, exactly. Why wouldn't you? I don't want people to know when I'm doing poorly. And you sit there and you go, so I think it's an important question to ask. And before, up until you actually do research, you're just guessing. And if you tell people you're going to do the research, you kind of ruin the whole thing. I think you could have done a smaller scale and actually got willing participants who didn't know what the nature of the test was. I think you could have done it in a way that was more ethical, or at least got user participation. But it's funny, with the article that I finally agreed with kind of broke down all these different options, and they say the biggest problem that Facebook ran into isn't the fact that they did it. They probably should be doing it. They probably should be trying to figure out how they're affecting people in order to not, you know, make people miserable. But they probably shouldn't be so honest about it, which I was like, well, whoa, I guess that's kind of dark. They're like, the problem is that it's like, it needs to be done. to some degree. And like, and even if you do small scale tests and you get a small sample size and you say, yes, we believe that this is what will happen, when you do it at large scale, you still need to double check your results at the large scale, which means that at some degree, after you move, quote, from beta emotional manipulation in a small scale setting, you go to full scale, you still need to make sure that you're not making people miserable, that you're not doing damage to entire societies. And the big question that I've heard that people have asked is this question of like, well, what if they ever do that with politics? You know, what if they only allow posts that are positive about one candidate and negative about another candidate? Well, like, yeah, that'd be hugely unethical and probably is going to happen. Like, you know, I don't know. I don't know what you do about that. And but the idea
that I was more like, for your competitors, you make all their employees miserable. For people you're recruiting, you make them extra happy.
Yeah, right. And I think, but the idea that they should just blindly not, I think it is most ethical for them to not, to try to not manipulate people too much, to do their best to try to neutralize their effect. But the idea that they should be blind about it, I think is naive personally. It's just how they go about doing it. And in classic Facebook fashion, they manage to do it in the most offensive way possible.
Yes. You know, that's... Yeah. They're just great about just doing stuff totally wrong and then going, oh, wait, that wasn't the way we're supposed to do it?
Yeah.
Like, they come on, guys.
They do come across as a bunch of kids, and which I realize is funny considering the fact that I'm probably younger than the average age of Facebook employees, but or at least I'm right at there. But they come across as a bunch of like early graduate college kids who are just like, you know, playing around with a toy that they've got. And I don't think that's their intention. That's the worst part. Is I actually think that this is a case of good intentions, relatively rigorous, you know, stuff. It's just, but they just come across as insolent kids who are just playing with a weapon that they don't, you know, they don't know how to use. So I do want to segue back really quick because I thought this was pretty awesome and I think it's going to be important, you know, with where Apple's going. But what did you think of the watches that were launched with Android Wear on them?
Yeah, I thought they looked cool, honestly.
Yeah.
The price tags are not small, obviously. Not a whole lot of word on battery life, at least for the, what is it, the Moto G? Is that the one everyone cares about? Which,
the Moto 360 is the...
That's the one. 360, which does look cooler than the other two.
Oh, unquestionably.
Yeah. No, it looks awesome, to be honest. I like them. I mean, I like my watch, and I go, ooh, color, voice. Yeah. I don't have to press buttons. It's all, you know, touch controls. I go, that's cool. Yeah. I could get behind that.
I'm the more and more I see the Moto 360, the more I'm like, I could go for one of those.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool watch. It's going to cost you couple hundred bones.
I don't know. And it won't work with my operating system. So
that's true. Well, there's a way to solve that.
There is a way to solve that. I got to upgrade everything.
Just get an Android One device.
Yeah. But they're cool. I really like the Moto 360. I think the other two are ugly and nobody's going to buy them because they're ugly. The 360, I think, is going to sell real well. I actually think that one could do quite well. And from a style, the round face on it is just looks nicer. And it's funny because, I mean, it's got more screen real estate than the other two watches. Huh. It's got more surface area. But because of the nature of a circle and its ratio to its surface area to its circumference, versus the circumference of a square with its surface area, it looks smaller on the wrist. It doesn't look as dominating. And when you see like tiny little Asian girls showing it off on their wrist, it doesn't look gigantic, even though it is. I think that's really, really, really important. And I think you're going to find that developers are going to sprint towards circular screens as time goes on, because they're all going to see exactly what everybody else is seeing, which, wow, that looks really neat, and it works just as well. And I think you're going to see, like, no sales of watches. You know, you'll see very, very limited sales, and then all of a sudden the 360 is going to hit, and everybody's going to go out, and they're going to sell a ton of them.
They're not going to sell any of them. They'll all be accessories to the phones.
Oh, yeah, probably. And then it'll be interesting to see what Apple does, because, you know, I think, you know, if they do a square face, I don't know, man. I just don't know. It's hard. Square faces are ugly. They always have been, which is why even, like, even your digital Casios, I think if you really, like, if you think about it for 10 seconds, the digital Casios, they all had circular faces, even though they, you know, there was no mechanical reason to have a circular face. Why would you have a circular face? It's all digital square readouts. But,
right.
You know, but they knew it looked better. It looks better on the wrist. It looks better in general. And so that's what they went with. And I think you're going to see that.
So you're saying my Pebble doesn't look good?
That's not what I'm saying.
Square, rectangle, technically.
I know. I think it's, yeah. I realize. I think circles look nicer.
That's okay. You're and allowed to think that.
I'm embarrassed by my Fitbit, since it's just a band. I mean, it's not a circle. What the heck? No, it does seem less cool, though, this week. I noticed it. I was hanging out, and I went to a barbecue, and I saw somebody else that had it, and my first thought was, just a Fitbit. which is interesting. I'm such a target. I'm such a bullseye. I'm so ready to buy an iWatch.
Yeah, so this watch, if I saw correctly, it is like pure notification, right? With limited responses back to it. There are no sensors inside of the watch.
Yeah, that's the big thing. Now, there's some cool things that Android Wear will do, like maps and like, you know, but more or less it's a screen extension.
Right.
Of your phone.
It doesn't collect any data. It just it outputs data.
This particular phone, correct. The Samsung, wow. The Samsung watch does. It does have sensors. It does have voice. I think the Moto 360 has voice actions that you can do. Samsung one. Yeah. The Samsung one does like have one of the, or I can't remember which. One of them has a heart rate monitor. Which is cool, and I would actually be surprised if the Moto 360 doesn't have at least a pedometer in it, cuz it's like the simplest chip to build. So, you know, they cost a fraction of a penny nowadays.
Right.
So I would be surprised if they didn't have that, at least your most basic health stuff in there. But it doesn't have the whole suite of them, unlike what, you know, the big prediction for, you know, Apple is that it's going to have 10 different sensors in it.
Yeah, which we know it'll only have 5, right? And we'll all be disappointed.
Right, and then in 3 years it'll have 10.
Yeah.
And I'll own 3 iWatches, which is really
annoying. And Android will have, Android Wear will have all 10, and we'll be like, oh, man.
Yeah.
So it's already been done.
Yeah, exactly.
So predictable. It's awesome.
Yeah. It is awesome. So,
You know what I could not have predicted?
What?
The SCOTUS ruling. SCOTUS?
SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States.
Supreme Court of the United States. Yep.
Yeah. The POTUS, the SCOTUS, and the CODIS.
Yeah, all those.
Three branches of the TUS. it's ridiculous. I listen to too much news. But so they came out with a couple of rulings, and I think they're interesting.
One of which I was surprised by, and the other one was, this wasn't a rule already.
Right. So what was? So tell me your tell which was which.
Aereo surprise, cell phone, shocked it wasn't already a rule.
Yeah, no, that's a big deal, man. They've been grabbing all your data and stuff because they take your phone. As soon as you get pulled over, they take your phone and they have complete legally they had complete access to it.
If they can get my password, sure.
Well, legally, some states would require you to give it, and if you didn't give it, they'd take your phone. Huh. And until they could have their investigators look at it, because technically they are all this is based off the idea that if you get arrested, they can search you and what you're carrying. And the rule was in the 1970s was the last time they looked at this particular branch of privacy versus security type question. What it was is a woman had a purse on her and they arrested her and they looked in the purse and found drugs. And the question was, were they allowed to look in her purse?
Ah.
Or was that being considered, quote, secure in her paper?
Interesting.
And the SCOTUS, the Supreme Court decided that you are allowed to search the purse. You are allowed to search whatever's in the purse. If there's open mail in the purse, you're allowed to rifle through the mail. Those papers you're not secure in. In that sort of a case.
Well, then I would say if you have a password set, you're secure. If you don't, sorry.
Well, but nobody had ruled on it, so the police were interpreting it, within their, the police were interpreting it, what gave them the best. And then it was going, all the cases that were going on this were going one or the other. It was like a 50-50. Like half of the time they were saying, no, you're not allowed to look in the phone. Half the time they were saying, no, you can look in the phone. And it was a 9-0 decision on the Supreme Court for, no, you're not allowed to look in somebody's phone. There's just too much in there, which is nice to hear because I know there's a big concern about the tech literacy of the Supreme Court as they are old as could be. But it looks like they unquestionably came down on the right side on this, in my opinion. The Aereo case, the only reason I was surprised about the cell phone one is because I was surprised it was a 9-0. I thought it was going to be like a 4-5. And
really?
Yeah. I did not think that they would all.
That's a no-brainer,
honestly,
to me.
You got a bunch of super rich guys that spend all their time buried in, old guys and gals that spend all their time, buried in a book. I was wondering, how many of these guys have smartphones with, and email and all their, their banking information and text and everything, and realize that this is everything. This is my papers. This is my filing cabinet that everybody used to have. We don't have that anymore. We've got this. And, do they understand what a cell phone was nowadays? And, clearly they decided yes. And they said that you're allowed to do things like the police, if they suspect you're a criminal, they're allowed to take your phone and power it off to prevent you from destroying evidence. And then they need to get a warrant before they can look at the phone.
See, I would do the password nuance, but that's getting too nuanced perhaps. If it doesn't have a password, that's as bad as you have a daily planner that you can just leaf through.
Right.
Or like you were talking about, if you have open mail, cool. But if you got a password, then, then they'd have to ask you for it and try to figure it out, and then it's right. done, and you don't have to tell them. And
right.
Because that's you explicitly saying, I want this protected. It's, what was that word that you used? It's enclosed by me or something. So I could see that subtlety totally and completely make sense, in which case everyone should have their phone password protected.
Right.
But,
I have a feeling you will see many, many more lower court rulings that sort of
pick up those nuances.
Yeah. Exactly. But the Aereo one I think is interesting because basically what they did, the problem
it's frustrating.
Is what Aereo was doing, you are allowed to do. Totally. You can
capture. Well, let's be clear. Signals. They won in lower level courts too, which is why
right.
I was kind of surprised by the outcome.
Right. Well, and it's, I mean, and obviously, the cable industry spent a ton of money on lawyers and stuff. And although I would guess that the Supreme Court is the least corrupt of your three branches as far as, donors go. They're not apart from politics. They're, they're just better at – they are the least swayed by it. But, not to get too far into the political weeds, but there have been a couple of rulings over the last few years that are only explicable if you look at them from a political perspective. And you know, the reality of it is they're only the balance of power that they have is that it's the Congress and the president's willing to uphold their ruling. So they've got to understand the politics that the other branches are against. So there's, you know, there are concerns here. They had to work in within, you know, some sort of a political confine, and the big cable knew that. And so they're going to spend a ton of money to make sure it went their way. But I think what's really interesting here is what the justification was and why it happened the way it happened, because basically what happened was Aereo is, you know, they're recording, you put an antenna on your home, they record the live broadcast, and then you can play it back over the internet. And the reality of it is that they only had one storage of all the different, you know, they only had one recording of all the different videos that they were, you know, moving. It's not like they stored your particular signals, you know, storage. It's just they could use anybody's antenna, and they kind of used everybody's antenna and in order to get around this idea. And I think, you know, if there is any semblance of copyright rule in this nation at all, you know, you can debate all day whether there should be or shouldn't be. But if you're going to acknowledge that there is, they were clearly reselling copyrighted material. I mean, like, I'm surprised they got it. I am more surprised they got as far as they did. And basically what the Supreme Court ruled was that they are a cable company reselling other cable companies' content. They can't do that. If you're going to respect the copyright laws, you can't let somebody do that. You just can't. Because all of a sudden somebody can record the NFL's stuff and then rebroadcast the NFL's, which I think, you know, the NFL would put a ton of money behind stopping that. I think they got really far on a loophole that a lot of people are saying it's a big enough loophole to jump through. And the Supreme Court basically said, yes, there's a loophole there that they were using to get this far. But the reality of what they were doing, if we look at the spirit of the law, not just the letter of the law, and kind of take the technology out of it in a second and look at just the copyright, what are they doing? They can't do that. You can't do that. I don't care how you get from point A to point B. You can't sell other people's content. And maybe that's a degree of difference. And maybe it's just a degree of difference, you know. But I am actually not shocked by the Supreme Court's ruling. I think it will have unintended consequences in how they defined Aereo, though. I do think that by defining Aereo as a cable provider, and that was their justification, that I think other companies are going to look at that and say, well, if we're a broadcaster over the internet, we're cable providers. Okay, that's interesting. We're a network. What does that mean? I think that is going to have long-term unintended consequences. And I think that'll be really interesting. I think Aereo still has a game plan. They had to shut everything down for now, but you know, at this point they can just sell hardware and it's not complete game over for them, I don't think.
Well, they're stopping operations for now. So,
well, but they got $100 million in the bank and investors all over the place. They're going to figure out something else to do with that money. They're going to keep the name, and they're going to try to figure out how to turn it into another profitable model. But, yeah, I guess I sit there and go, I get it. You just can't, you know. it was a loophole, and they got really, really, really far with a loophole. And the reason why they had raised $100 million is because everybody realized, all these investors had realized, that this was a huge loophole, and if it worked, it would destroy the cable industry. And because it basically was a death knell to a certain form of copyright. But
yeah.
So speaking of entertainment networks. GoPro finally did the deed. They've been prepping for it, and the whole purpose of it was they're raising capital to build a media platform. But they went pro this weekend. They went public this weekend.
Did you get in on that, man? Ground floor?
I didn't, because I just wasn't paying attention to it. And the only reason I saw an article about it, I was distracted.
You did this podcast?
I was distracted with Asia over the last few weeks. And man, I wish I had, because it bumped to like 50% the first day. They so underestimated how much their IPO.
That Robinhood app needs to come out, because I would totally get on in this kind of stuff. I just don't want to pay the fees. Which,
right?
I guess I'm being penny foolish, but whatever. Or right. Pound foolish? What is it? It's penny wise.
I think it's penny foolish.
Pound foolish.
Yeah. There we go.
Because I could have paid the whatever it is, the $8 or $4 transaction fee, bought the share, bought some few shares, still would have worked out for me.
Yeah, exactly. And it's because they started out, it's GPRO stock.
24.
It started at 24, and I'm trying to figure out.
33.
It's at 33?
Isn't it?
No, what is it at right now? It's at 35.
What?
Yeah, and it's high. At its high, it was trading at 40. I mean,
oh, man.
Yeah, it did pretty well. It did not do, you know, if you jumped in on the IPO at for GoPro, you had a pretty good week. And I think it's just a good sign all around, because I think obviously GoPro has hit some magic in that it is the last standalone digital camera that people get excited about.
Man,
without with non-DSLR. There's like nobody buys non-DSLR cameras anymore, with the exception of the GoPros. And I think that's it's just going to keep going that direction in their favor until there's a big technology shift of some sort.
Who works at my church. Well, doesn't. Who goes to my church, who works at a separate company, his job is to make camera enclosures for typically researchers, and he goes, and 95% of the stuff they do is like underwater type things. And he's like, and what they'll do is they'll send us to camera and say, can you make an enclosure for this? And he's like, and we just make them, which is kind of cool.
That's kind of cool. That's very cool, and the GoPros, they go right in the center of them. But the big thing here is that clearly, you know, they've made their entire. Although they're great for all sorts of things, for drones, for webcams, for whatever. I mean, they're great for a lot of different aspects. Their big, you know, advertising campaigns have all been about the sports. You know, they're super durable stuff, and so the idea is that they're gonna set up their own media platform. They're going to do they're going to make it easy for people to post their videos of cool sporting things that they've done, the highlight reel as it were. Probably integrates with Facebook, things like that. You'll have an app.
That's what it does.
But they're opening up the ecosystem, and they're, you know, and it'll be, I think it's going to work out great for them, because it'll be really, you know, you'll get these super entertaining videos of snowboarders and skiers and mountain bikers and all sorts of cool stuff, and you'll be like, man, I want to be a really cool athlete. I should go buy a GoPro. And
exactly.
And I'll probably fall into the same category. And, you know, I'm sure in a year or two after this media platform comes out, I'll have a GoPro and wonder, why did I do that? So that I can take pictures of myself, you know, running slowly. But it's a cool platform. It's cool. Yeah. It's a cool piece of technology. And I'm excited for GoPro, especially since they're they're local kids to the Bay Area, and I'm
rooting
forward
for
to see you. Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
Looking forward to see what comes of it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right, man.
What
did we
that?
Do Google justice? I'm trying to figure out. Do we do it justice?
Whoa, sorry. I opened the GoPro website to look up their exact address, and it started playing music in my ears. Like, what is going on? And I didn't know where the music was coming from. Did we do Google justice? I hope so. I'm okay. I'm gonna my final note's gonna be this. I actually think we were a little bit critical of them, whereas when Apple came out, we were like, it's all amazing. I think a lot of what Google is doing is really cool, really exciting. It's going in the right direction. Well, obviously, the Moto 360, I think, sets the bar.
Well, and I would say if we own Android, we would be pumped. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I guess that's the most fair thing
that's
to say.
That's our problem.
Yeah.
We don't have any skin in that particular game.
Yeah, so it's a little less... But I think they're going to push the... They're going to keep pushing the ball forward in a couple of different areas, and I like it.
I agree. Cool. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow. My transforming soccer-playing brother is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time. Thank you.